Hello and welcome to Healthy Bloomington with Dr. Andre. I'm Dr. Matt Andre, a family physician here in Bloomington, Indiana. And on this show, we talk about issues of health and medicine and try to introduce people to the healthcare resources in our community. And this week, we're stepping outside of our community to a degree, as I am here with my very good friend and colleague, Mr. Kevin Ferguson. And Kevin, please tell everybody who you work for and what you do.
I'm senior IP counsel at Medtronic, formerly part of Covidien, where we were acquired. So it's the medical devices and surgical instruments part of our business.
Excellent. And IP, explain what that is, if you will, a little bit.
Intellectual property attorney. So that means I deal with mostly patents and working with R&D teams to protect the innovation ideas that they come up with, but also some of copyright and a little bit of trademark stuff.
Okay. So IP in general, I mean, I've known a lot of people that have worked in those kind of fields, and it's always seemed a challenge to me because trying to put a value and trying to assign ownership of ideas is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely can be. And so one of the things we have in most large companies do, especially if you have an R&D team, is all of the work that those people do as part of just their employment and part of the agreements we have in your employment agreement is to assign all of that. Essentially, you know, the company's hiring you to come up with innovations around our technology and our field, the medical devices. And so that is, you know, part of what I try to work to do is make sure that we identify, that I help identify that and then capture and protect it.
Got it. Okay. With when people are, I think one thing people don't understand is that when it comes to medical advancements, whether that's in pharmaceuticals or in devices, I've been surprised through my career the number of times that has come from kind of private ideas, private people who come to companies with thoughts about, hey, I think this is something that might really work to help solve a problem. That is a big part of what you do with them, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. We have external ideas, and we have portals both at Medtronic and formerly Covidien that, you know, allow people to submit their ideas to the company. And I think, you know, most large companies do, but definitely the medical device industry, because it's interesting that most of the physicians are kind of on the front line. They can identify where there's a real need for a new tool or a special kind of design or modification of a tool, because our R&D teams are smart, they're good engineers, but they're not using the tools day in, day out. And that's really where,
right,
you know, collaborating with physicians is an important part of what we do.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about Medtronic itself. I have known that company because they make some of the best products for and devices for managing and testing for diabetes of anyone in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Their glucose monitors are something that we use in our practice. Insulin pumps are things that we refer patients for, but they do a lot more than that too.
Yeah, no, they definitely do. They started back in the late 1950s, I believe. I'm learning myself a lot about Medtronic, but Earl Bakken came up and identified the need for improving pacemakers. And so that was kind of where the Medtronic company grew up,
mm-hmm,
was in the cardiac field, pacemakers and later on stents. They expanded to diabetes in the 70s, I believe. And then they have also have the one of the other divisions is their spinal implant business.
Okay.
And so those three were the large sections of Medtronic, and then now they added the surgical instrumentations from Covidien. So those are kind of the four parts of the business.
Four branches.
Yep.
Now, when physicians or people, techs or whoever's working in the industry does have an idea, and I've experienced this myself, that you'll go to a company and you'll say, hey, I've kind of got this idea. I think this might help solve a problem that we see in healthcare. The company will a lot of times talk about using what they call an NDA.
Mm-hmm.
And for people out there who are interested, can you tell them what that is?
Yeah, NDA is just a non-disclosure agreement. You may also hear CDA is a confidential disclosure agreement, and they're essentially the same thing. What we want to do before we start talking to a surgeon or anyone else externally that has an idea is we want to just lay out in a simple agreement that they're going to share their information with us, and we will hold that as confidential. The agreement may also say, and this that would be a one-way non-disclosure agreement.
Right.
Just simply, you're going to tell me your information, and I will keep it confidential, but I'm not going to tell you anything.
Mm-hmm.
There can be sometimes when you want to advance the conversation, have a more collaborative conversation, which may be a two-way non-disclosure agreement. So in which case, you know, the company would say, the company's also going to share information with you, and you, you know, have an obligation as well to keep that confidential. So sometimes that may be where we're, we know that we've identified that there's a need to improve a certain kind of design, and we have already in our minds several, you know, design specifications. Mm-hmm. But we need to talk to a surgeon and really figure out which one of these maybe three or four concepts is better. What parts do they like about them? So we want to get surgeon feedback on ideas and concepts as we develop a product. And so that may be a case where, you know, we're going to share with you a lot of the needs we've already identified in some of our designs, but the surgeon then may have an obligation to keep that confidential and not, you know, disclose it to others in the industry.
Sure, sure. And those are really to protect both parties. It's not just to protect one of them.
Right, yeah. And that's what I mean. The terms of the agreement should say whether it's one-way or two-way. And so a lot of times as well, one of the things, at least from my chair as the intellectual property attorney working for the company, the thing I want to make sure is that we have lots of R&D teams working on lots of different ideas. And so, you know, part of what the agreements may spell out as well is that, you know, the company may not have an obligation to do anything with the surgeon's idea. And it may be because we internally already have worked on similar technologies. It may have our own, you know, technologies that we want to remain free to be able to develop.
Well, I think everybody that comes up with an idea thinks they're the only one that ever did.
Right. Yeah. And so that's part of just, you know, level setting that expectation before we go into the conversation is something that should happen around the conversation around the non-disclosure agreement, just so that everyone kind of understands where the conversation may go and that it may not go too far.
Sure, sure. Isn't also, I mean, sort of researching and finding out what else is out there around it a big part of what you have to do?
Yeah, definitely as an IP attorney. I mean, we have an obligation as we develop products just to make sure that we're respecting other people's IP, same way we hope they respect ours. And so, yeah, looking to make sure that we know the state of the art in terms of what the patent landscape is part of where I provide advice into my R&D teams and the company mm-hmm. as a whole.
How actually do you find information like that?
There's lots of different ways. Primarily, if you work in one technology for a period of time, you develop an expertise and you kind of just know the landscape, especially in some medical devices. There are certain companies and certain inventors that have really invented certain, you know, techniques or procedures. Obviously, surgeons all know, you know, oh, the Lichtenstein technique for doing inguinal hernia repair. And mm-hmm. there's products that develop around, you know, certain procedures that, you know, the design of the product really goes well with, you know, the method that the surgeon has come up with. And that's why, you know, historically there have been lots of products that are developed by surgeons that then, you know, they work hand in hand with a company to really take the basic of the design and turn it into a commercial product, which is, you know, something the company's more suited to do, and then also work to distribute those products. So
it's actually in essence partly comes down to relationships. It's people that you know in the industry or in the field where people are interested in bringing a product out. You know who the players are
We've got our key opinion leaders, our KOLs, in a lot of fields that we work with, in part because they really are the experts. I mean, we, you know, are experts at designing equipment and, you know, tooling, at least in my surgical business.
Yeah.
But we're not the experts on knowing the anatomy, knowing the clinical conditions that the patients have. And so we really do, you know, rely upon, you know, key opinion leaders and others that are, you know, primary caregivers to, you know, fill in that gap in our knowledge.
How did you end up in Medtronics? Or was medical kind of always where IP things gravitated for you?
Initially was an IP attorney, and I've always enjoyed the IP side of law. I knew lots of things I didn't want to do in law. And intellectual property, though, working with people who were coming up with new ideas, who had a vision, and then to try and take that vision and turn it into an actual product to bring it out to market and kind of share it with the world is exciting. Mm-hmm. So when I was in private practice, I did some of that, and that's the part I really enjoyed the most, was working with people who were developing new technologies, maybe not as much litigation and fighting about
afterwards. Sure, sure, sure.
So then as I was looking to kind of, you know, build on my career, the opportunity to go in-house and work for a company that has a lot of R&D that needs to, you know, continually be monitoring its R&D and trying to make sure we identify and build, you know, protection around that was interesting to me. And the chance to go work for a medical device company is one I really enjoyed because it's just a great field to be working in, to know that the, you know, the widgets we turn out really do matter to people's lives. They make an impact in terms of people's quality of life, you know, in a way that maybe other industries don't.
And you get to feel a part of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you get to see it before, you know, 5 years before everybody else. And that's fun.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people also don't know, and again, I've had some experience with knowing some attorneys who worked in IP. I mean, it says a lot about you that the company would actually bring you in, because the IP business in general, a lot of those folks have to sort of work to get the business.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's being able to go in-house, at least for me, was great because it's much more collaborative. Rather than being, just an attorney who gets consulted on an individual case or when a problem comes up, we really sit within the business and try and, help them look at, not only just the R&D teams and new product development, but also dealing with where we have, external surgeons and other partners. Lots of times we work with vendors. Sometimes as we develop tools and devices where we need to get expertise from somebody in a different industry, maybe around metallurgy and trying to get kind of the right combination of strength and flexibility in materials where we're really getting to, micro-sized devices these days. So, that kind of...
The whole robotic medical world is
doing nothing but growing. Now you've got software and a lot of, kind of technology that goes into, systems like robotics that are not our traditional strengths in terms of, mechanical engineering and building that. So what I have to do and bring to, to the team as a whole is trying to make sure that we set up all those relationships in a way that, the company will be able to, to the extent that we've created unique technology, be able to take that to the world, but protect it from people and not only in the U.S., but worldwide, being able to quickly copy device. And that's something we see is, the world expands and need for healthcare expands around the world. There definitely are people in lots of countries outside the U.S. that are more than willing to, to copy something quickly and not innovate.
Right.
And so that's just a balance that we try to work out.
That's actually was going to be my next question. Patent, of course, is a federal federally regulated thing.
Yeah.
Are there differences state to state?
No, for patents, it is just a federal system. For trademarks, you can do state to state. There's also a federal trademark. Copyright is national as well. But yeah, mostly patents, when you talk about patents, you're talking by country. So you have a U.S. patent, you file in the United States, it goes to the United States Patent and Trademark Office, and after the process of back and forth with the patent office, it's called patent prosecution. Hopefully you get an issued patent, and then you can enforce that in the United States. Along with that, you probably, if you're working in a large industry like mine, will file patent applications in several other key strategic countries around the world. Europe is one of them. Mm-hmm. You can just file one European patent application, and that will work across Europe. So you only need to, you can designate any one of the European countries after you get your granted patent that you want to keep it in. We also do a lot just based on where we sell a lot of our products and business, sometimes in Canada and Australia. Japan is another country that we selectively file IP in. And even increasingly, China's a field or a country where we file IP in. I think that probably definitely wasn't the case maybe 10, 15 years ago. But as the Chinese market grows, it's something that we need to
think
about.
They have to get more incorporated into the way the rest of the world does it as well.
They are. And I think that that's something where right now it's, the ability to enforce a Chinese patent is something that the Chinese government and the Chinese patent office is learning itself about. But we have successfully enforced some of our IP in China. And I think as they become, a player in the global market, and we see now more Chinese companies filing their own applications and having litigation against people just copying their ideas in China. So I think while the system's developing, I think they're moving towards having a real IP protection in China that Chinese companies, but also larger Western companies or global companies will be able to rely upon with more certainty in the future.
And I could be very wrong about this, but my sense is that culturally, just because of the cultural differences in the way that we think about ourselves in relation to community, that's not the same in every country around the world. And there's oftentimes more of an us mentality, and that kind of speaks against the idea of somebody, even personal ownership, whether that's about property or ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's different tensions, and you will see different patent systems emphasize maybe kind of public benefit, sometimes more than that. And probably the biggest example is India has taken a pretty public policy line against extending long patent protection on pharmaceuticals, especially where there are drugs that, are needed by a very large percentage of the population that can have a really marked effect on their health. They've broken a few patents, essentially, the Indian government and said, for AIDS and I think some other things, that we're going to just copy it.
For the good of everyone,
Yeah, and so, countries and will make policy kind of based on, what the reality they're dealing with on the ground and kind of what the social values are within a country. But I think overall, there's definitely a sense there are more treaties globally in the last decade or so that are kind of standardized around at least core patent protection. So I think that is getting more reliable worldwide as we move forward, which is, I think, a good thing for companies and ultimately, hopefully, for most of the consumers.
What are the biggest challenges that you all face when you're, is it in getting enough sort of new ideas, or is it in managing the regulatory landscape, or is it in getting people who are disagreeing to get to the same table?
All of them. especially from where I sit, innovation, we're always looking for, what's next? How can we do things better? How can we make our products better? How can we improve outcomes? Mm-hmm. We try many options for that. We have our own R&D teams working internally. We always are looking for external submissions. People come up with the next new thing to come, tell us, talk to us about it. And we also look at, the size of the company we're in, have the benefit and the position of being able to talk to lots of smaller companies where people who have an idea and a vision, but they know they can't make that vision, can't take it to its fullest potential. And so a lot of times we do acquire smaller companies that have, kind of established technology and have been able to quite nimbly and quite quickly develop, an idea to the point where it's ready to take the next step. And so we keep ourselves very open to, trying to find the next new idea in as many ways as we can. But from other parts and my colleagues that work in the regulatory agency and everything else, the healthcare industry is already highly regulated, but not only by the U.S. government, but also many other governments around the world.
Sure.
We do have to make sure that, we are being compliant. As it becomes easier and governments are, more concerned about situations that come up, there are, regulations that continue to promulgate, and it's tough to keep up with.
Right. Do you get pressure from regulatory agencies or government places in order, in terms of cost, what ways you can help to keep costs down for the management of sort of our medical conditions?
I don't know if it's pressure as much as I think there's a real growing acknowledgement within the medical device industry that we definitely want and need to partner with, and outside the United States, it is governments that run many of the healthcare systems.
And that's who their customers are, people that work in the device industry. If they're going to other countries, they're not always talking to other physicians. They're talking to government agencies.
Right, the NHS or in England, is National Health Services, they are the primary player in the market. But I think overall...
And they're not going to pay a lot for this muffler. You've got to bring it down they can afford it.
We need to work with, what resources they have. But I think one of the things that we're really looking to do, and in terms of where innovation goes, is not how do I make something necessarily cheaper all the time, and we do try and take cost out of our products, but how do we identify problems, clinical conditions in patients earlier, and how do we treat them earlier you can treat that disease state or maybe even prevent a much larger issue earlier in the care continuum. So I think that's something that is a company, definitely Medtronic's looking at. How do we treat diseases earlier and treat them more effectively, more efficiently, more cost effectively, so that the cost for that patient is something that's much lower overall, and the outcome is much better for the individual as well.
Sure.
So I think focusing on early identification where we can and early treatment is one of the ways where it's a win-win-win for us, for the ultimate payer, and for the patient.
Got it. Well, certainly not asking you to give any legal advice, but for people out there, whether it's patients or caregivers, providers, who think that they may have some ideas that would be innovative that would help in the care of some of the patients, what advice could you tell them about things that it would be important for them to do when they're thinking about how to organize their thoughts or their ideas around a concept to bring it to the appropriate people with the likelihood of improving care?
Yeah, we have, at least as a policies company, one of the things that we ask people to do before they share their ideas with us, just because we as a company do lots of research and we don't want a situation where we have a physician who likes us, likes working on our products, tells us their idea, and then later on we come out with the same device a year later because we've been working on it for
exactly,
5 years already.
Exactly.
We ask people to go file a patent application that documents their idea, and you can do it. You can file what's called a provisional patent application. So it doesn't have to be, overly formal. Set in stone. And from the time you file a provisional patent application, you have 1 year then to decide whether or not you want to file what's called a utility patent application that would claim the priority back to the provisional, but then you could add more details. You could have it, written by a patent attorney that would go through and really make sure that they look at identifying all the unique parts of your invention and detailing out, how you make it, how you build it, in a way that could be more detailed. But yeah, so before people come to us, we ask they file a provisional patent application, just because that quite clearly marks out, you know,
somebody what who's their serious. Invention
is. Right, yeah. Somebody who's serious. And part of it, too, is, you know, more than just a, hey, wouldn't it be great if kind of ideas.
Right, right.
I have, you know, a lot of my family members come to me with the, hey, wouldn't it be great if. I say that that would be great. When you figure out how to do that, come talk to me. But if you really have put the time and effort to think about how to do it, and you've got, you know, a real kind of, you know, solution that's kind of firmly fixed in your mind, then that's the point where you can file a provisional patent application, like I say, and that protects you, really, when you go out to your conversations with, you know, potentially different business partners on it, because it does make sure that, you know, your idea is going to be attributed to you. And so that's kind of the first step. The other part of it, too, is, you know, you don't have to do extensive searching, but it is good, I think, sometimes just to, and the tools are really now with Google Patents is a kind of a great resource.
Yeah.
To be able to go out and just kind of look at what's the state of the art? How have other people approaching this problem?
Who else has come up with a similar idea?
Right. And sometimes you will find, oh, that's pretty much what I was thinking of. And maybe that saves you from, you know, spending a lot of time and resources on an idea that may not be the first one to have it. But other times what it really will do is kind of set a baseline for you if you're looking to see what the state of the art is. And from that baseline, then you can, you know, really develop it and see what's missing there. You know,
yep.
What
element has been left out?
Right. And then from there, I mean, in our field, the medical devices, a lot of it really is, I don't say incremental improvement, but, you know, you're building off of and, you know, taking fundamental designs, but, you know, somehow or other making them more efficient or, you know, better. And so those kind of improvements, you know, make a difference.
Excellent. Well, Kevin, we're about out of time here, but I appreciate you being on and being willing to talk to us about this because, you know, I think people forget that really private industry, both in devices and pharmaceuticals, is where we get our innovations mm-hmm. in medicine. And we all want new treatments for things. We want better ways to take care of our healthcare problems. And it's an incredibly important piece of all of our healthcare system.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for letting me hopefully educate people a little bit more just on the process so that as they go into it, they feel a little more comfortable.
Absolutely helpful and really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us on Healthy Bloomington with Dr. Andrea.